I'm on now, right? Oh. So we are going up to 2:45 then?
Yeah.
What? Yeah, and have those discussion paper things handy, because we'll give those out before lunch. So we've got to finish at 1:45 today in order to get to the front of the lunch queue. We didn't say the offering prayer, did we, yesterday? I wonder if that's a good idea or not. Before we break, we should say the offering prayer. Have you got them? So the next topic of the 11 topics of the fourth chapter is characteristics. But I've been planning to get on with talking about paths, as I said today, so we really got to squeeze that one out, I'm afraid. Characteristics is a bit of a, well, what should I say, you know, a lot of different divisions again of put into various categories. I must say it's a bit beyond me what it all means. That one's of the sort of all the topics. That one's sort of one of the hardest to get into, I'm afraid to say. So I haven't translated any verses from it. So if we can just maybe read the summary and then leave it, otherwise we won't get on to paths, which is our discussion topic and everything for this afternoon, so we have to sort of move ahead, really. So if you'd like to look at page 124, this is just a very short conclusion to the topic 5, characteristics, which in my root text I've translated as marks. So I'll leave you to find out what's in there yourself, except for just reading the summary, page 124. In summary, there are 4 types of characteristics, with a total of 91 characteristics, that help us to develop a deeper understanding of the applications, the trainings. The 48 knowledge characteristics indicate what knowledge is gained by the applications of each of the 3 exalted knowers. The sixteen distinguishing characteristics indicate how these bodhisattva applications are superior to those of hearers and solitary realizers. The 11 functional characteristics indicate the special functions or benefits of the applications. Finally, the 16 entitinas characteristics are the actual applications that serve as a basis for illustrating the previous three characteristics. So it looks a bit kind of, you know, what's in there? It looks a bit complicated, and it is. I don't really kind of get much sort of inspiration out of that so far, but if you persist, probably you can get some sort of interesting ideas from there, but just have to pass on. So in the handbook, if you'd like to go to page 33, so that's a map of the paths of someone in the Mahayana lineage. And then if you've got the photocopy of the diagram that I did, which you was handed out for weekend two last year, a sort of a simplified diagram in a way, although it does include the hearers and the solitude realizers, not just the Mahayana path. So it looks like that. So that might help you a bit. The handbook diagram's got the grounds and the paths. You know, there's a bodhisattva grounds come into it. Don't think we'll have time to talk much about them, but maybe there's room for questions. So that's maybe one reason why the handbook diagram might look a bit more complicated. But there is this one thing I think is a mistake, which I'd just like to try and point out. I'm looking at the handbook diagram, right? And you can see path of seeing and path of meditation. Now there's a line between them. No, maybe that's not a mistake. I was wondering if that was a mistake or not. Leave that. Don't want to change anything unless I'm sure about it. So let's leave that. And then you want your this weekend's handout. So that's got some introductory points about the path that we'll start with. So handout for this weekend. It says points from the presentation of paths according to the Yogic Middle Way Autonomy School. Yeah. So if you look just above that, we have the list of study possibilities that we're trying to get through. So, you know, we've been through the 110 aspects, the principal trainings, qualities of the trainings, faults of the trainings, marks of the trainings, which, as I said, that's the same as characteristics, right? I just use the word marks because it's so much shorter when you're trying to cram things into the verses. You have to avoid using long words like characteristics too often. So marks of the trainings, that's the characteristics of the trainings, which you've skipped over. So number 2J and 2K, that's great vehicle partial concordance with liberation, and then partial concordance with definite discrimination. So that's the path of accumulation, path of preparation, as we pointed out yesterday. So, you know, we're at a point in the fourth chapter where we need to know about paths. So we're going to talk about some aspects of the path of accumulation and path of preparation. So this is my sort of jumping off point for my digression into going into sort of paths, a little bit of an overview in more, you know, general way, so that people aren't totally confused. then we can come back to the particular points about the path that occur actually in this chapter, you know. Okay, so just the underneath there is just in small letters, caveat, some significant differences from the middle way consequentialist school presentation. All right, so this is the yogic middle way autonomy school, Svatantrika. So if you expect the Prasangikas to be the same, you'll be disappointed. But won't go into the differences. That can come later. So definitions. So I'm taking my material from Jetsunpa, his presentation of grounds and paths. It's translated in English a long time ago, I don't know who by. So that's around. See how grounds and paths makes this is a subject on its own, you know, like signs and reasonings or mind and awareness or collected topics. So it is a text that you can study just on its own. And I think people in Serajay Monastery, Jetsunpa's the Jetsun Chökyi Kelsen, so that's the textbook writer for Serajay Monastery, which is obviously where a lot of the FPMT material is coming from. Of course, that's where Lama Zopa was from. So there is a grounds and paths text. So I'm taking some of his ideas. So that can be profitably studied as a separate text, but it's not in the basic program as they're doing it here. Did you study that in the basic program in Italy? Grounds of Path? No. I don't think it's put as an optional subject. The 70 topics is, you know, where you go through all the topics of the One of the Clear Realizations. That's an optional for the basic program. Did you study that, 70 topics?
Not 70.
Yeah. It's not necessarily a good idea to do it, as I said, because it might get a bit... Anyway, but the other one is Kedrubje. Kedrubje's also did a small text. It's not the whole book, it's just a few pages from the book, but it's in there. So his version of Grounds and Paths, Salam in Tibetan. So we can compare their two definitions at the beginning. Jetsunpa says... Exalted knower, which is maintained by an uncontrived determination to forsake the world, or you translate that as renunciation, is the definition of path. So his word is what we usually translate as renunciation. I just translated it in a slightly different way, just for a change. But uncontrived determination to forsake the world. Uncontrived means, you know, spontaneously arising. You've meditated on it so strongly that you don't have to think too much about it anymore. It just comes up naturally, more or less all the time, I suppose. So it's not just a conclusion that you reach after a period of meditation and thinking about things again and going over your examples of what you think about when you want to develop renunciation. It's uncontrived, it's this much more spontaneous, fully developed sense of renunciation. You've really seen the truth. So it arises spontaneously whenever you kind of look around. So you really have to have a very strong sense of renunciation, in other words. So exalted know, which is maintained by that, that's the definition of path. Maintained or held, sometimes they say. Supported, but held or maintained, those are commonest translations. Any sense what that means?
It's what will lead to liberation. Without renunciation, it's going to lead to liberation. So that's why it comes
about. Well, yeah. So that's having this view in mind, the determination to forsake the world, then your virtuous acts can, you know, lead towards liberation, or readily, can't they, you know? And your meditations will go in that direction, because, like, that's your motivation for meditating. And that's, you know, the motivation with which you're dedicating your merits to all go in that direction. But what does it actually mean to be held, you know? Like they say, when a Mahayanist, you know, the person in the Great Vehicle Path, when they're meditating in emptiness, the meditation will be held by bodhicitta, or maintained by bodhicitta. Or conversely, if you're meditating on bodhicitta, then your meditation should be held by the wisdom realizing non-duality, the wisdom realizing non-true existence. Kind of, yeah. Well, you have a meditation like meditation on emptiness. No conventional phenomena will arise at that point. Yeah? You're just meditating on emptiness and all your sense of any duality, this is me meditating on the object, you know, all that should drop away, especially like in a single-pointed and direct realization such as you'll have on the path of seeing. Yeah? So your mind can only emptiness appears and there's no sense of self-awareness or anything. Your mind is just like totally absorbed into that object. So you can't be thinking about Bodhicitta at the same time. It's impossible, see, because Bodhicitta is a conventional phenomenon. As soon as you were thinking about Bodhicitta, your meditation and emptiness would, you know, you'd be distracted away from it. You can't hold those two at once unless you are a Buddha, you know. So even the high bodhisattvas, according to the sutra system, they can't do both. So you can't have both at once, kind of in a manifest way. So you have one is manifest, and the other one is like pervading with its sense of, the force of it is still in the mind. So it's example that our teachers gave is, you know, you have a fire in your kitchen, and you know the Tibetan stove is blazing there with the yak dung. Then the fire goes out, but still there's a warmth in the room for a while. So the room is still pervaded by the warmth, even though the fire's gone out. So you do your meditation on bodhicitta, so that's like the fire is blazing, but then you have to switch to emptiness. And so you meditate on emptiness, so bodhicitta is no longer sort of the manifest determination in your mind, but your mind is still pervaded by the warmth of the bodhicitta. So your meditation on emptiness is still enhanced by that bodhicitta. So your meditation on emptiness is so much more powerful because it is still held by bodhicitta. You know, like the hearers can meditate on an emptiness, you know, they can meditate on the same thing, but their meditation doesn't burn away the obscurations to knowledge because they haven't got the sort of great sort of, you know, strength of bodhicitta or intensity or warmth of bodhicitta kind of, you know, infusing their minds. Yeah. So, you know, remember in general, the hearer meditates on personal selflessness, absence of the self-sufficient, substantially existent person. The solitary realizer meditates on absence of duality of subject and object, the classic mind-only view. And the bodhisattva, his sort of ultimate truth that he meditates on, or she, is the absence of true existence, absence of, the middle way view. So, although they all have those different objects, it's not impossible for a hearer to realize emptiness. They don't say that's impossible. So the hearer can realize the profound emptiness of that the Mahayana is talking about. They can realize the meaning of the perfection of wisdom, the sharper ones. They don't have to. It's not necessary for them to get to liberation. But you can see their meditation on emptiness would be kind of quite slight compared to the bodhisattva who's got all this power of bodhicitta behind it, you see. So the bodhicitta has got the power to burn away those knowledge and obscurations, which the hearer hasn't. Obviously, he hasn't got that sort of oomph of being held by bodhicitta. So the person meditating on just an emptiness, you know, his meditation on renunciation has to take a back seat because he's concentrating on impermanence, you see. But you can see how, you know, you want your meditation on emptiness to be sort of infused or informed by the meditation of renunciation, you see? So that's what it means by held by. So this person who is got a path, he's created the lowest kind of path, so he hasn't got bodhicitta, he's just got the uncontrived determination to forsake the world, he might be meditating directly on renunciation, so that's okay, you know, then his mind is held by renunciation, or he's meditating on impermanence or, you know, suffering, any of the aspects of the 16 Noble Truths, but still with the force of that determination of renunciation, kind of, you know, yeah, sort of heating his mind to some intensity. Otherwise, Kedrup J, his definition of path, a liberation path in his case, clear realizer which provides the opportunity to progress to enlightenment. This is a definition of liberation path. So you can just concentrate those, contrast those two definitions. Yes. Well, if you take, if you take Jetsunpa's definition, you see, some clever, or not so clever, some foolish debater can say something like, considering the subject, the path to the path to the rose garden in Regent's Park, it follows it is an exalted now which is maintained by an uncontrived determination to forsake the world, because it's a path. So what would you answer to that? You brought the subject up. Considering the subject, the path to the rose garden in Regent's Park, it follows it's an exalted knower, Yang. Considering the subject, the path to the rose garden in Regent's Park, it is an exalted knower, because it's an exalted knower which is maintained by an uncontrived determination to forsake the world. Considering subject the path to the Rose Garden in Regent's Park, it is an exalted now which is maintained by an uncontrived determination to forsake the world, because it's a path. No pervasion follows there is a pervasion. If it is a path, it is necessarily an exalted knower which is maintained by an uncontrived determination to forsake the world, because those two are mutually inclusive. Definition, definiendum. There's no waffling, eh? What's your answer? No pervasion, I accept. Not established. Why? You accept those two are definition, definiendum. Okay, yeah, so this is... So the debate is then, considering the subject, the path to the Rose Garden in Regent's Park, it is an exalted now because it's a path. That's a basic definition, a basic consequence. Is a path, yeah. So then it follows it's an exalted knower. Because it's a path. There is a pervasion. If it's a path, it is necessarily an exalted knower, because it is an exalted knower. It's necessarily an exalted knower which is maintained by an uncontrived determination to forsake the world. Even though it is a knower. Oh, you don't get said a waffle. You have to get me into my Dharmakirti mode in a minute if you're just not going to answer properly.
But still they have pervasion.
Posit the pervasion. If it is a path, it is necessarily an exalted now, which is maintained by an uncontrived determination to forsake the world, because those two are definitely are mutually inclusive. So they are mutually inclusive. So if it is one, it's necessarily the other. Well, it follows that the path of the Rose Garden Regent Park is not a path, because it's not an exalted knower, which is maintained by an uncontrived determination to forsake the world. We'll have to stop, but there is a correct way to answer it, which some of you students have got to, you've got to get it, man. It's a silly debate, but at least it gets us repeating the definition, which is very helpful for us to remember it. But what's the technique for answering? Yeah. Yeah, but we just haven't got time now. So, but we can come back to that if we do have time. Yeah. So. Yeah. So Gedrub J is taking a one way out is to put liberation path as your definiendum. So, you know. But Jetsenpo is leaving a few problems for his students to sort out on their own. So I'll do that. Yeah. Well, at least you have a bit of fun doing that, and then you repeat the definition a number of times, so it starts to stick, you know, so it's good. Anyway, here, enlightenment, liberation, nirvana are equivalent. So we each have three grades. So there's a hearer's enlightenment, a solitary realizer's enlightenment, and a Buddha's enlightenment. A hearer's liberation, solitary realizer's liberation, and a Buddha's liberation, and so on. So, you know, we may be used to thinking of liberation, that just means solitary, you know, Hinayana liberation or something. Enlightenment, that sounds more like the Buddha's enlightenment. But, you know, when you are kind of in this context, think of them all, you know, they're all sort of equivalent, and they're the three types. If it's a liberation, it's necessarily an enlightenment and so forth. Okay. So the classic way these texts continue, you've had a bit of a debate about the definition, so then you go on to the divisions. So if paths are divided, there are five ways of dividing. So there are many different ways of dividing paths. It's not just a question of, oh, they're divided into the five paths that we're so familiar with, or hopefully trying to get familiar with. But there's different ways of dividing them according to your needs. So the first way, you can divide them by way of vehicle. So if paths are divided by way of vehicle, there are two, lesser vehicle and greater vehicle. And if the lesser vehicle is divided, there are two, hearer vehicle and solitary realizer vehicle. So if you look in Kedrup J's text, you'll then get definitions of each of those. So again, you know, kind of more kind of issues and sort of shades of meaning might come up. But I've left those out. So here we have the more familiar division into five. So this is division by way of object. Well, anyway, the second division. If divided by way of object, there are five: path of accumulation, path of preparation, path of seeing, path of meditation, path of no more learning. Okay, so maybe some of you have heard of those, some of you are very familiar, but others I think will be not quite sure of that, the order they go in and everything, so try and, you know, make it clear now. This is your opportunity. Clear realizer of the doctrine is the definition of path of accumulation. Path of accumulation, clear realizer of the doctrine, ground of faith, beginner's ground, and concordance with partial liberation are all equivalent. So, be interesting to try and put some meaning to those different synonyms there. So, where are we? Yeah, but you've got to fulfill the basic definition. You've got to have that uncontrived determination to forsake the world. There might be... Pardon? Yes, but it's got to be uncontrived. What does it mean by uncontrived? Tsongkhapa says in the three principal aspects of the path, you know, it's got to be night and day. It just arises, you know, you're completely turned away from the attractions of cyclic existence. They don't give you you're not interested in them even for a moment, and so forth. So somewhere in here, we've got the meaning of those bits. But where did I put my page number note? I don't know. Okay, why is it called the path of accumulation? It's called such because it is the first path that accumulates virtue for the sake of attaining, you know, their respective liberation. Accumulation is accumulation of merits, accumulation of virtue. Accumulation of merit and wisdom, maybe. Accumulation of virtue, that's what Jetsunpa says. Yeah, and even on the path of preparation, the path of seeing, you're also accumulating merit. So. Valid objection. But that's the way these things go. You know, you can get an explanation of the term, but, you know, they say, well, but all the paths are like that. So it follows that every path is a path of accumulation. So it follows the path of seeing is a path of accumulation because it's, you know, a place where you accumulate virtue for the sake of attaining liberation. But it says here the first path, you know, Jetsunpa says the path of accumulation, even in his terminological, you know, explanation of the term, he says it's got to be the first path that accumulates virtue for the sake of attaining liberation. So yeah, it's only when you've got that sense of renunciation that your virtue really starts going towards liberation and nowhere else, you know. We can do a good example, like Jan carrying his neighbor's bag, as he's so fond of doing, you know. But if he's not got renunciation, that will just, you know, that'll just ripen up in samsara. It'll ripen up as a samsaric happiness. Like he might get reborn as a human being just for carrying that bag or something. Well, somehow it must start going that way going in that direction in a more fixed way, isn't it? Because, you know, we're also encouraged to dedicate our merits, motivate, and dedicate. Yeah? We're all encouraged to do that. But it seems unless you've got, you know, that renunciation, it won't go towards liberation kind of guaranteed or something. And then if you haven't got bodhicitta, then it won't be like, you know, part of the two accumulations you need in order to get to the liberation of a Buddha. So these are questions to ask people when you have a chance to meet somebody who's kind of quite learned and so forth, and can give good answers. So yeah. That's what it's saying, isn't it? You know, your accumulation of the two collections of merit and wisdom, like to get you to enlightenment, will only begin when you've generated bodhicitta and entered the path. Okay, it is known as a clear realization of the doctrine, path of accumulation, that's one of them, isn't it? Clear realization of the doctrine, because of being the occasion at which the meaning of the words of the three collections of doctrine is decided upon mainly by hearing and contemplation. Yeah? So later on you get wisdom arising from meditation. Later on you get direct realization of the truth. But at this stage, you are hearing the teachings and reflecting on them, and maybe you're getting inferential cognition, inferential value cognizer from your, you know, reasoning. You're able to establish something like, you know, the subtle truth of suffering, the subtle impermanence through reasoning. So this is, you're hearing the Dharma, you're hearing the doctrine, but it's you're assimilating it only as far as you've got these inferential cognition of them. You know, the beginner's sort of realization of hearing contemplation without you know, the concentration of single-pointed, you know, calm abiding and special insight. So that comes on the path of preparation. There is a reason for calling it the ground of faith, because it is the path which is the occasion for being skilled principally in the five objects: faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So when we get into the order for clear realization, kind of, you know, brief description of the path of accumulation, those five are mentioned. So faith is maybe, you know, a shorthand for those five mental factors, kind of starting to become skilled in those. And the next one, the concordance with partial liberation, which is this kind of quite odd kind of description or term for the path of accumulation, which hasn't really caught on outside of the order for clear realizations, which isn't surprising because it's such a funny name, isn't it? It is called concordance with a partial liberation due to the fact that as the true cessation, when the deluded obscurations have been abandoned, is liberation. So that's the afflictions of the obscurations of the afflictions. You abandon those at liberation. You abandon those completely, and then you have liberation. So that true cessation, the complete true cessation, that's liberation. Okay, but here we're not talking about concordance with that. We're talking about concordance with partial liberation. So partial liberation is when just the intellectually formed afflicted obscurations have been abandoned. So when does that happen? So you're not abandoning all the afflicted obscurations, you're abandoning just the intellectually formed ones. Path of seeing, yeah. So that's another word that needs a bit of explanation, isn't it? For you chaps. Pardon? You know, you're abandoning the afflictions. If you're a hearer, you're just abandoning the afflictions and their seeds, right? So that's your obscurations of the afflictions. And that means your nyamongs. That means your desire, your attachment, your greed, your grasping, your pride, your deluded doubt, you know, and deluded ignorance. So those are your afflictions. So if you abandon those, mainly through abandoning the root ignorance, then you can get to liberation, liberation from suffering. Suffering won't occur. You won't be reborn in samsara when you've got rid of those afflictions. You've got to get rid of them all, not just the manifest ones, but the afflictions are the seeds of the afflictions. So we might not be angry now, but we've still got the seed of anger, right? So you've got to get rid of even that, you know, that seed from which future anger can spring. And you will do if you meditate on selflessness long enough. But that would be the total liberation. You know, you've got the complete collection of true cessations. But you start, your true cessations begin on the path of seeing, by where you abandon permanently, you know, for good, but you abandon only just a portion, the grossest form of your afflicted obscurations. The grossest level, let's say. So it's considered a complete abandonment. They won't come back, even though you've still got the subtler levels. But so it's a true cessation, but it's only a true cessation of the grossest level, and the grossest level of these afflicted obscurations are called the intellectually formed ones. So those are the ones you've somehow picked up from going along with what other people say or something. It's like you know, the ones that come about not instinctively, you're just born with them, but it's the ones that sort of grow up with you through hearing wrong teachings or hearing different sort of tenets. So the intellectually formed ones, it's like the ones that are just acquired in this lifetime rather than acquired through thinking in wrong ways rather than sort of being there instinctively even when you're born. So that's, anyway, that's the sort of grossest level of the afflictions that you have to abandon. So it's the grossest level of afflictions of the obscurations of the afflictions. When do you abandon those? You know, on the path of seeing. Well, that happens on the path of seeing, yeah. Well, that's more or less right. I'm not disagreeing with that. But technically speaking, the first part of the path of seeing, you're realizing emptiness for the first time directly, right? That's the big thing about the path of seeing. Well, in this school, they say they all happen simultaneously. You realize the emptiness of all 16 aspects at once, but mainly thinking about this grasping at selflessness, or in the case of the bodhisattva, emptiness. So what's happening? So the first moment of the path of seeing is like you're still applying the antidote. So the antidote is the direct path, the direct realization of emptiness, right? And you've only just generated that. So you're not. You can't say as soon as you take the medicine, you're better, you know. So the medicine has to have time to work. So the first part of the path of seeing is the antidote is booting the delusion out of the door, sort of thing. The antidote is booting the ignorance out of the door. It's attacking the ignorance, it's dissolving the ignorance, whatever you want to say. No, that's what they say. Like, it's like throwing the ignorance out of the door. So when that happens, which is takes, you know, it's an action which takes time, over a certain time, then the ignorance grasping at this, you know, the intellectually acquired, you know, ignorance grasping itself. So that's gone. But you haven't closed the door yet, you know. So then you close the door, bolt the door, so it can't get back in. So at that point, you are liberated. At that point, you've got your first true cessation. So the path of seeing has gone on for a moment or two before you've actually done the full abandonment. Ah. It is. It is not. Accept. Yeah. Yeah, so you've got to bring in the word concordance. So it's not like the path of accumulation is the partial liberation. It's the path of seeing that you can call partial liberation. So the path of accumulation is concordance with the partial liberation. So it's something which is like something similar to the partial liberation, or something which is, you know, on the way to the partial liberation. So to give you the wording of this translation, so that abandonment or true cessation of the intellectually formed afflictions that have been abandoned, yeah? So the true cessation is the abandonment of those. That's the partial liberation. And the path of accumulation is a concordance with that partial liberation, because it's a path which is an occasion that concords with attaining such a partial liberation. So it just means you're on the way there, isn't it? It's like you've got something which is going in the right direction. So concordance means, it doesn't mean it is the actual partial liberation, it's just something which is, you know, in tune with that partial liberation.
So concordance
is really
very important.
Yeah, so. Because we'll come to the synonyms for the other paths, path of preparation, path of seeing, so it might become clearer, that phrase might reoccur, I don't know. Pardon? Yes, well, if you'd like to turn the page. So we've finished with the path of accumulation now. I don't think there's any divisions there. Well, there are divisions, but they're not, I'm leaving them out, sort of thing. Now we have the... Oh, just one more phrase about... One more sentence. Well... Starting at the bottom, working our way up, you know. These, my diagram, it's working from bottom upwards. And the handbook diagrams are working from left to right. So you start off with the path of accumulation, that's the first path. Just to slip in something about the great vehicle path of accumulation, top of page 2. Clear realizer of the doctrine, which is held by great vehicle mind generation. Yeah, so now you've got it not just held by renunciation, but it's held by great vehicle mind generation, bodhicitta. So that's an equivalent for great vehicle path of accumulation. So that's same thing applies to the next three paths below. Now we can go on to the path of preparation. Clear realizer of the meaning. is the definition of path of preparation. Path of accumulation, clear realization of the doctrine. So this one, clear realization of the meaning. Yeah, so we're getting down to the nitty-gritty now, getting our teeth into it, so we can go on to the path of preparation. Path of preparation, clear realizer of the meaning, limb of definite discrimination, concordance with definite discrimination, or all equivalent. So hopefully Jetsunpa says something about those. Oh no, I've lost the page again. Eh? Here we are. The hearer's path of preparation is so called for the reason that it is the path which is the occasion of preparing for the direct realization of the Four Noble Truths. So again, you could say, well, the path of accumulation is also preparing, you know, stuff, if you want to be picky. But the path of seeing arises directly after the path of preparation, doesn't it? You know, the path of preparation leads into the path of seeing without any gap. So it is, you know, the final preparation. It's the last stage before you get to the path of seeing. So there's some sense in calling it the preparation, isn't there? The reason for calling it the clear realization of the meaning is that it is the path which is the occasion of attaining an experience arising from meditation of the meaning of the teachings with respect to gross or subtle selflessness. So here he's talking about the hearer's path, but we can, you know, transfer it to the solitary realizer and bodhisattva path without too much trouble. So on the path of accumulation, you're just working with the wisdom arisen from hearing, wisdom arisen from contemplation. So you're thinking about the teachings and mainly sort of getting to know the words. And, you know, you can you sort things out and maybe memorize the words and so forth. Maybe do the bit of the inferential cognizer, you know. So you are understanding to the point where you're getting realizations, clear realization. But what is special about the path of preparation? So it says, clear realization of the meaning, because it is a path which is the occasion for attaining an experience arising from meditation of the meaning of the teachings. So what does that mean exactly? No, because I think you can have a correct sign realizing emptiness, for instance, or selflessness on the path of accumulation. You can realize emptiness even before you enter the path, actually. If you're a sort of sharp type, you know, you realize emptiness first, bodhicitta later, fine. You realize emptiness and then you can really develop renunciation because you really see what the Buddha's talking about, you know, how flimsy samsara is. When you realize emptiness or selflessness, then you can really give up on samsara. So your realization of selflessness, using reasoning, can come before even you develop renunciation. No, that would be a path of seeing. That's when the path of seeing begins. Yeah, there is a reason for calling it clear realization of the meaning. The reason is that it is the path which is the occasion of attaining an experience arising from meditation of the meaning of the teachings with respect to gross or subtle selflessness or emptiness, whatever it is. Okay, so what does it mean by an experience arisen from meditation then? Well, it would be a deeper understanding and, you know, a more heartfelt understanding one would expect, wouldn't it? You know, it'd have more impact on you, it'd shake you to your foundations and so forth. But wisdom arisen from hearing, wisdom arisen from contemplating or reflection, and wisdom arisen from meditation. So those are three meditations, three levels of wisdom which are kind of there. That's sort of more widespread in Lamrim literature. You'll hear those three. That's sort of quite a well-advertised sort of gradation of wisdom, isn't it? It's not just something that you only find in these teachings here. So what does that mean? What's your name? Branko. Branko, yes. Yeah. So here we're talking about selflessness, about emptiness. You're realizing you've got a union of karma abiding special insight, realizing emptiness. Okay, so you've meditated on karma abiding, so you've got your mind into this state of single point of concentration, which is pretty effortless for 4 hours or so. You know, you can do, the mind can rest on this object. And then you've worked so that you've you can use that power of concentration to form analysis, yeah, to form your reasoned analysis about emptiness or selflessness. Because when you first develop that sort of concentration, they say as soon as you start to try to think and analyze things, your concentration just breaks up. You know, as soon as you start to say, well, is it this or is it that, you know, now this is dependent arising, so can it be empty at the same time, you know? You know, when you start to evaluate things like that, then your concentration disappears, right? Or if you concentrate on the reasoning, you're going for the analysis, then your concentration is sort of out of the window. So those two at the beginning are quite, you can't marry them together. But as you practice, you'll gradually be able to maintain your state of single-pointed calm abiding even while you're doing the analysis, right? And you may be able to realize something lesser than that. You know, you get the union of karma abiding special insight, but maybe you're meditating on impermanence, so that doesn't count. Yeah? It's only when you get the union of karma abiding a special insight, the meditative stabilization, you know, which is a union of karma abiding special insight, actually realizing emptiness. So it's still an inferential realization, but it's got such a power of concentration behind it, you see, so that's another step up then. Then you're on the path of preparation. Then you're on the home straight, you know, going, heading for path of seeing where you realize emptiness directly. So that's the key thing. There's meditative stabilization, which is a union of calm abiding, special insight, focus on emptiness, or your, whatever is your ultimate truth of your vehicle. That's the point at which you enter path of preparation. And that's why they call it clear realization of the meaning, rather than just a clear realization of the doctrine. And the other, even more complicated name for it, or synonym, limb of definite discrimination, or concordance with definite discrimination. So the reason for that is, well, better stop there really, it's getting close to lunchtime. Yeah, well, we haven't gone very far, have we? I gave Jason some questions for the discussion hour, so I won't discuss those now because you just have to sort of struggle with them. But obviously there's a lot of new material here, so you have plenty to discuss just going through anything you find continuing the subject on the handout. We can do a bit more after lunch, but you know, we're going to have a reading through the sutra. So we'll distribute some papers and do a sort of resounding a reading of that. So, you know, not a lot of time. We'll do a bit more debate, a bit more meditation. So, you know, time is running out. But anyway, there's no problem about the discussion hour. You've got things to talk about. Okay? It's on the path. The question is about the path. So any questions? All right, so that'll be at 2 o'clock. Come back and go into the break into the groups, so 20 minutes, 25 minutes, or half an hour or so. So we better offer the lunch, which presumably has taken shape by now, so we can offer it. Om Ahum, Om Ahum, Om Ahum. To the precious Buddha, peerless guide, to the precious Dharma, peerless refuge, to the precious Sangha, peerless liberators, we offer to the three jewels of refuge. This food with 100 flavors, attractive and well prepared, is offered to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas through devotion. May all beings enjoy the wealth of food of concentration. Seeing this food is medicine, we eat it without attachment or hatred, not out of avarice, pride, or wish for an enviable body, only to sustain the body.